guys, what's up? Welcome to another edition of Everyone Has a Story. I am your host, Nate Wade, coming to you from the great state of Idaho. We have Brenda Baumgartner-Stanley on the show with us today. Fantastic story. Thank you, Brenda, for stopping by. Truly appreciated sharing some time with you and getting to know your story a little bit. She talks to us about how she moved from Utah to Idaho and how she got into broadcast journalism and why she waited decades to finally get her first novel published that she wrote when she was 17 years old. Fantastic story, great story, and you guys are going to look for, I know you are going to look forward to it. I'm looking forward to hearing the conversation. I know you will too. How has your Labor Day weekend? As I'm recording today, I should have actually had this up on the air, but I was camping. Yes, I went camping for the last bastion? What a terrible English. Last blast of fall, and took my family up to Montpelier, Idaho area, which is just kind of close to this really amazing lake called Bear Lake. So we went camping, went up to this cave called Minnetonka Cave, which is probably one of the deepest caves in Idaho. Really cool cave. If you've ever been to Carlsbad Caverns, it's not that impressive, but it's still pretty cool and how deep it goes, and there's bats in there, and it was a lot of fun. Lots of steps. So if you do go, bring a jacket and make sure you're somewhat in shape, because there are lots and lots of steps. In fact, there's this one section that's like 118 steps. They actually call it the Stairway to Heaven, because it looks straight up and there's like this light at the end of the stairwell when you get up to the top. So it's kind of cool. Let me ask you guys this question. When you go camping, how many of you guys use a tent? And how many of you guys have a trailer? Because I think at this point in time, even if we have to go in major debt to get a trailer, I want to get a trailer. We decided to buy some cots for us because, look, I'm getting old. And so when you sleep on the ground, your body gets stiff, you don't sleep very well, And we bought some cots. And so my poor kids, they got to sleep on the ground still, but we had some cots. And so I'm sleeping. I'm like, okay, great. Well, here's the first thing that happened. My cot wasn't folded out completely. So my back was completely like right up against a metal bar. So that wasn't very comfortable. Beyond that, I thought, you know what? I'm always worried. I'm worried about wild animals. Usually we camp up in the border between Idaho and Montana, and that's bear country, okay? A lot of places in this country, you don't have to worry about wolves and bears and things like that. But in this section of Idaho and Montana, it is grizzly bear country, not just black bears, but grizzly bears. So everybody, you know, you always kind of have to be concerned about whether or not a bear is going to wander into your camp. But where we were camping this weekend, there's not really a lot of grizzly bears down in that area. There's probably coyotes and foxes, deer and elk and things like that, but not a lot of grizzly bears, probably maybe a few black bears. I wasn't concerned. I wasn't even really even worried about the animals. Yes, I'm a whip, okay? I'm a chicken. What can I say? But for some reason, I could not sleep. I probably slept maybe an hour to 2 hours that night. It was terrible. It was not fun, and I hated every minute of it. And then it got freaking cold. I'm not a hunter. I know, that's weird. I live in Idaho, and I don't hunt. What kind of Idahoan am I? I don't know. Maybe I'm just the wimpy kind. But yeah, I mean, it got really cold. Luckily, I have a nice sleeping bag, so I finally just shoved it over my head, pulled the strings tight, and finally got warm and got about an hour to 2 hours worth of sleep, and that was about it. Then we went to Bear Lake yesterday. Amazing lake. It is huge. It's about 7 miles wide and about 30 miles long and deep, really deep in some places, but it has a really huge, long, shallow area where you can walk out into the lake probably 300-500 yards without it even going over your head. In fact, it doesn't even go up to your chest. It's so shallow, which is really cool. It's a beautiful color. It's got a lot of limestone in it, so it's got this bluish turquoise tinge to it, which it looks amazing. If you've never seen Bear Lake, look it up. Bear Lake, Idaho. Just an amazing, impressive lake, and very busy. There's a lot of people that come up there. It's half of the lake is in Idaho, half of the lake is in Utah. But from what I can tell, it looks like more Utahns use it than Idahoans. That's my guess. I don't know. Anyways, I hope your Labor Day weekend was great and you had a good time with your family. Maybe you barbecued, maybe you went camping, you know, whatever you did, maybe yard work. I don't know. However you celebrated Labor Day, I hope you had a fantastic time. And enough mumbling and rambling on here. We'll cover the details, you know, the sordid details of how you can help my podcast out at the very end. But right now, without any further ado, great story from Brenda Baumgartner Stanley on Everyone Has a Story. So I know of you, probably just like most everybody else around here knows of you, and that's at least from the TV. Mm-hmm. And what years was that you were on TV as an anchor?
Well, I started here in Eastern Idaho in 1992.
Okay.
Is when I started.
So. Okay. For some reason to me, I was graduating high school in that year.
Yeah.
But for some reason to me, you feel like the other anchors in town, like you were kind of always there for some reason. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, you think of Jay or Carol or even Ken Torrey or mm-hmm. somebody like that. And it was just, Brenda was already always there, you know.
Yeah.
So how long were you on the air?
Well, I was on from 1992 till about 1995 with KIFI.
Okay.
And then I took a job at Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center.
Okay.
And I did that because I had worked at Channel 8. And in fact, it was my first on-air job, mm-hmm. on-air TV job, mm-hmm. right out of the University of Utah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I was there for about 2 years. And then I was promoted to the main anchor position. And what that means is you work the 10 o'clock show.
Mm.
And at the time, I was thrilled because okay. it was like, wow, this is great. I got this, you know, incredible promotion. And I was actually able to make a better living
yeah,
with that
sure.
promotion.
Sure.
Problem is that the shift for that position is 2:30 in the afternoon until 10:30 at night.
Oh.
And I had 5 children mm. who were all in school at that time.
Yeah, so you're basically missing all
I
the
never
time.
Saw them.
Yeah, that, I mean,
never
that's the time that you need to be with your kids
exactly.
is during that time frame. So,
yeah.
Interesting. Well, let's go back a little bit then. So,
okay.
are you from Idaho? Where,
no.
where are you from exactly?
I was actually born in San Diego.
San Diego?
Yes.
Okay.
My father was a San Diego police officer.
Okay.
And then he became, in 1993, one of the first DEA special agents in the country.
Oh, yeah.
He worked undercover. And his job was to arrest drug dealers by pretending to be one.
Oh, wow.
And so we moved all over the country.
Sounds slightly dangerous, was it?
You know, at the time, it's so funny because I have 3 younger brothers. And for us, it was normal.
Just what
Dad
did.
It was just what he did.
Okay.
You know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she took care of the house and the kids, and my dad went to work pretending to be a drug dealer. And it just was kind of this normal thing for us. It sounds crazy now.
Well, yeah, it kind of does.
It is. It was. But it was an interesting childhood because I went to 6 different elementary schools.
You did? Wow.
And so, because when you work undercover and you make a big arrest, everybody
knows who you
finds
are.
Out who you
sure.
are. And so you can't stay in that mm-hmm. area and do that job. So you have to move somewhere else. So we basically lived in, you know, the most crime-ridden places in the country
oh,
as
wow.
we moved around. Mm-hmm. And then it was good for me in a way because I was very, very shy as a child.
Mm.
I mean, extremely shy.
Mm.
And it forced me to make friends. I had to do it every time I started in a new school. I had to make new friends.
Sure.
And so that was, it was actually a good experience in that
yeah.
regard.
So kind of like a military child in effect.
There. A lot of people, when yeah. they hear, you know, I went to this school or that school or whatever, they automatically assume that's what
You're
I was
military.
Doing. But my father was shot when I was young during a drug bust. And he was very fortunate in that it didn't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
It blew his arm apart, went through his abdomen. I mean, really, really damaged him.
Yeah.
But he's got the unfortunate distinction of being the first DEA agent shot in the line of duty.
Oh, really? Wow.
So, yeah, not much of a distinction. So, but anyway, he ended up going back to school and got his graduate degree and then became a police chief.
Okay.
And his first job as a police chief was in Orem, Utah.
Oh, wow.
So we went from living in the most crime-ridden cities in the country to Happy yeah. Valley, USA.
Yeah, no doubt. So, I mean, mm-hmm. that had to have been... So the whole time your dad was working as a DEA, were you... You traveled around the whole country or
it
what?
Was mostly in the kind of the Southwest mm-hmm. area,
okay.
border you know, a lot of the border cities.
Gotcha.
There.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. So then you end up in Utah. Mm-hmm. Was that kind of a culture shock
it
for
was big,
all of you?
Oh, huge okay. culture shock. I okay. mean, it was one of those things where we were so not used to that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you go places and people would smile at you and wave.
Yeah,
and
no
you
doubt.
Didn't know them and yeah. you were wondering, why are they smiling at us?
What do you want?
Yes, it was just real. And people were bringing things over, you know, from the neighborhood to our home and welcoming us. And it uh-huh. was just, it was really just kind of a strange thing for a while there. I mean, we got used to it and really enjoyed
sure,
it.
Sure,
and it
sure.
was a nice place. I went to junior high and high school there. And
oh, okay.
so to have that much time in one area, one town, was nice. It was a nice adjustment, I guess, uh-huh. from that. So
yeah, then you went from traveling so much to just kind of really kind of establishing roots in that respect.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, it was.
Nice. And high school was a good time for you or?
Yeah, it was an interesting time because I actually ended up, I got married in high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was a teen mom. And
okay.
so I ended up getting married in high school and having a child very, very young.
Mm.
And that, I did graduate,
mm-hmm.
But I ended up, you know, having to work some pretty crummy jobs in that, trying mm-hmm. to make a living
sure.
when I was, you know, very young. My husband and I had to move to Roosevelt, Utah,
mm-hmm.
because at the time, the economy was so terrible. You know, we were in the early 80s.
Okay.
And we just could not find work. I mean, we had no education really to speak
sure,
of
sure.
And trying to find jobs to support a child. And
mm-hmm.
it was so hard. And the only place we could find jobs was in that eastern Utah area because the oil fields were booming.
Oh,
out
I see.
There.
Okay.
And so we found jobs out there. But, you know, it was an incredible learning experience for me because I worked so many terrible, terrible jobs during that time. And you learn really quickly what you don't want to do in life.
Mm.
And that was a really yeah. good experience for me.
I don't know. I mean, I'm glad you learned really quickly. I don't know if I learned really quickly. I've worked some pretty crappy jobs
well.
And here I am 45 years old.
Not,
anyway, so I don't know. So so you guys didn't go directly to school then after you guys graduated from high school?
No.
So were you on the regular track to graduate or did you have to take like alternative school to graduate then?
I was very fortunate in that I had done well in high school up until that point.
Uh-huh.
And so I had enough credits that I only had to go to school as a pregnant mom, you know, or pregnant soon-to-be
sure,
mom
sure.
for a little while.
Okay,
and so I
gotcha.
Was able to graduate from there. And, you know, I had always wanted to go to college, especially
mm-hmm.
seeing my father go back to school and talk about the opportunities that that was going to bring for, you know, both, you know, not just him, but our family.
Mm-hmm.
I really, from a very early age, wanted to go to school, wanted to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I became pregnant and all that, I had a lot of people tell me that I basically would never amount to anything.
So you threw your life away, basically, in
that's,
a sense.
Oh, I was told that by a lot of my teachers. And
oh,
that.
Really?
Oh,
wow,
yeah.
That had to have been hurtful.
Oh, it was. It was. And but yet it was also one of those, I've always been kind of stubborn.
I'll show you.
Yeah, it was. Okay. It almost it was kind of that feeling of, don't tell me what I can't do,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I'll show you. But I will tell you that it took a long time to just try to get on our feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I eventually got a job as a police dispatcher in Roosevelt, Utah.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the minimum wage at that time, the jobs that I was working at that time was $3.32 an hour. And I remember that very well.
Nice.
And when I got the job as the police dispatcher, I was making $5 an hour. And I thought I had
you're rolling
hit
in the dough.
Big dive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a huge
yeah.
thing. But my shift was 11 p.m. to 7 in the morning.
Oh, really?
And I did that because that way I didn't have to put my daughter in daycare.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, I was a zombie by the time I got home.
Yeah.
And I would nap when she napped, you know, so it
mm-hmm.
was a really tough, tough schedule and tough time to try to do that. But it was good money
mm-hmm.
at that time
mm-hmm.
for us. And I got my start in news, oddly enough, during that time because the radio, you know, the radio station is where those tiny towns got a lot of their local news.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
They would have daily papers or weekly papers or whatever, mm-hmm. not daily usually. And so radio really gave more of the timely news.
Right.
And they would listen to the police scanner to hear what was going on.
The radio station would mean?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And the same thing like today.
Yeah.
I mean, every news department has a scanner their newsroom going off. And one day when I was working my shift, the news director at the radio station called and said, I like your voice. Have any interest in doing radio?
Oh, wow.
And I'd never even thought about it and kind of thought, well, no, not really. And he said, well, do you have any interest in writing? And that, because from the time I was really young, mm-hmm. I wanted to be a novelist. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write. So I had always written, and at that time, I'd actually written my first novel.
Oh, wow.
I wrote it when I was 17.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so when he said, you know, do you have any interest, experience in writing? I said, oh, my gosh, I love to write. And so it really intrigued me, but mm-hmm. I knew if it didn't make at least $5 an hour, there's no way I was going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And when he told me it paid $6 an hour,
oh wow!
That's how I got my start in news.
Well, that's not too bad.
It was heaven because
that was a full time job that
it was.
That he offered you? Wow,
it was. And so, it was a it was just an incredible experience, but mm-hmm. just such a lucky thing mm-hmm. to have happen. And mm-hmm. and I love that job. I enjoyed, you know, asking questions and asking for interviews.
Mm-hmm. So you were basically an investigative reporter for this radio station then? Or
I was
exactly?
a reporter, okay. a radio reporter.
Okay.
And, you know, I would tear copy off of the AP mm-hmm. wire and rewrite yeah. it. But also,
I worked in radio for a while. I remember doing that
okay.
myself. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, they still have that to a certain degree.
Yeah,
of course, it's not off the actual teletype that we had.
Yeah.
But
our stills was. Yeah. I worked in I worked at KID radio in town, but that was like 91, 92. Mm-hmm. It still actually was that like
teletype.
Ticker tape type thing that come off of there. But it's changed a lot since then, I'll tell you.
Big time. So. Yeah. It's a whole different ball game.
And,
but that's how I got my start in news. Wow. And then we moved to St. George, Utah a couple years later because it was booming down there,
mm-hmm.
you know, able to find work, and I got another job as a radio reporter down there.
Okay.
And then, but then I had my first set of twins.
Oh, wow. Okay, so how old were you at this point?
Oh, golly. I would say, I think I was 22, 23.
Okay, and so at this point you have three children.
I did, yeah, three kids.
And you're trying to make ends meet.
Trying to make ends meet.
Wow. And so you still haven't really decided to go to college yet then?
Well, that's exactly when I started.
Okay.
When the twin girls were 3 months old, I was still really, you know, had this dream of being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was writing news, it wasn't the same.
Mm.
It was not the type of writing that I really wanted to mm-hmm. do. And I had carried this book around that I had written. I actually wrote it out longhand on legal pads.
Oh, really?
That's all I could afford.
Wow.
And then when I finally got enough money to buy a manual typewriter, one of those, you know, Hunt and Peck, bought that and typed it out again on that.
Mm.
And then later I got an electric typewriter that had one of those correction keys, and
nice.
Thought I had made it. And I retyped it out on that. And then even later, you know, when I got a computer finally, I retyped it again. But I wanted to – I never showed it to anybody.
Uh-huh.
Never, because I just didn't have any confidence in it.
Really?
And just thought, you know, I just don't know if it's really good, and I don't know if my writing is really up to speed. And so I took a nighttime English class at mm-hmm. Dixie College, mm-hmm. and – because I wanted the writing, but also I needed a reprieve from, you know, these three-month-old twins. So I thought, you know, I'll take a little night class
sure.
and see how, you know, how it goes. And the professor was such an amazing person. I mean, he just gave me so much feedback and support and said, really should do more with your writing. And I loved it so much that I ended up registering full time that fall.
Oh, wow. At Dixie College down there in St. George.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so, what did you go into then as far as your degree was concerned?
Right then, you know, for that first year, my freshman year, it was all just generals.
You just did generals.
And I tried, I took every class I could that would fit into what I needed that was at night so I wouldn't have to because I really didn't have a babysitter, so I would try to do all these, you know.
So you kind of had limited choices then?
Okay. Now, you know, and so I took everything, you know, I mean, crazy classes that, you know, and even classes that that I didn't really need for my degree, but they I could use for an elective, like genetics.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
okay.
I took that as an elective class, where a lot of people take, you know, super simple, easy classes for electives.
Yes.
But because genetics was taught in the evening and it fit into my schedule there, I would take it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more what could fit in. But I did well my freshman year. And then my sophomore year, I had my second set of twins.
Wow.
Yeah. And they
two sets of twins.
Yeah. Yeah. And they came really early. They were almost 3 months premature.
Oh, really?
And so it was a real.
And we're talking mid 80s then? Or
it was. Yeah, and so, you know, it was a whole different thing than how they do it now.
Right. Absolutely.
A lot of experimental stuff. And they were at Primary Children's for over 3 months.
Okay. So up in Salt Lake then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that was a real tough back and forth. I did end up, I continued going to school.
Wow.
And
so how big were they when they were born? They had been like just a pound or two, weren't
they?
Well,
actually, they were pretty good size considering how early they were. One was 3.5 and the other was 2.13.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It wasn't, but it was.
But regardless, that's enough to keep them in an ICU for a while.
Their lungs were not developed. Yeah. You know, all those problems that you have with the premature stuff. But you know what? They did well, and eventually we got to bring them home and then it was chaos. I had four kids under the age of two. And so,
I can't even imagine. That would have been crazy.
It was. Oh, it was.
And so how old was your oldest at that point?
She was almost like six, almost seven at that time.
So maybe not really old enough to help too much?
She actually was a huge
help.
Was
she?
Oh, my gosh. Great. Yeah, she was such a big help. And not just at the, you know, at the beginning, throughout. I mean, she's always been a really big help to the point where I thought this girl will never want to have children because she's already raised mine.
She's already,
you know,
diaper changes.
Yes, I mean, she was such a big help, and I really appreciate, and you know, hope I didn't put her too. She claims, you know, she loved it and really enjoyed being the big sister and helping out. So
you say she claims. You have doubts?
Well, you know, back and I think, you know, she had to babysit an awful lot and do things, but she's got four kids of her own.
It must not have turned her off too much.
No,
yeah,
four she's kids. She's a very good mom.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always nice when, and I have a feeling she's telling you the absolute truth. I bet you she did enjoy it. And it sounds like she really liked helping mom out and helping with those kids. That's great. But you continued to go through college
that
whole time, and it was a four-year degree?
I got my associate's degree from Dixie,
and
then I ended up getting a full scholarship to the University of Utah.
Oh, okay.
So we moved up there, and I was still, even with the scholarship, you know, I still needed to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in school full-time, and then I was able, though, to find jobs as a writer, magazines, newspaper, and as a producer for KUTV up in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a nice thing, you know, to be able to actually find jobs that were in what I wanted to do made it really nice. And then I was sent to Washington, D.C. during the 91 Gulf War.
Oh, okay.
And worked as a producer for ABC News out there for a very short amount of time. But it was just enough to help me realize that I wanted to go into television news as my major.
Oh, okay.
Up to that point, I just knew I wanted to be a journalist. You know, I knew that I could not find a job. They don't advertise in the help wanted for novelists. And it just doesn't work that way.
And so my wife has found that out.
Yeah. Learn early on that, you know, I'm going to have to find something that actually pays the bills.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I could do it as a writer, great.
Sure.
And so that's why I went into journalism. But I realized, you know, during my stint working for ABC News, that TV news is what I wanted to do, because it wasn't just telling stories with my writing. It was with sight and sound together. Mm-hmm. It was just this full spectrum.
Multimedia.
Yeah, and it just really interested me, and I really enjoyed it. I was honestly really nervous about it because I knew I would have to go in front of a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'd done live radio and enjoyed that, it was all different.
Yeah,
you know,
I bet.
The idea of that. And so that took some real getting used to.
I bet.
And it's still, I mean, people, you know, say, well, you know, are you still nervous when you go on thinking that I'm going to say no? And actually, every time, those little butterflies still... happen.
Still there, huh?
Yeah, wow. And it's a good feeling. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved doing what I do, but it certainly wasn't just a piece of cake.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but it's challenging. Then I mean, it sounds like it still maintains its appeal to you. Then,
oh, it does.
To a certain, yeah,
absolutely. Great.
So your degree then at University of Utah ended up being what then?
Was broadcast it? Journalism?
Broadcast journalism.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And during that whole time, you continued to work at KUTV down there?
I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you? Pretty much, you didn't have any anchor position down there necessarily?
No, no. In fact, I hadn't gone on TV. I had done the, you know, college station where you get your experience and all that.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that was the first and, I mean, really only experience I had on air until I was hired at KIFI, Local News 8.
Oh, okay.
And I was hired as their weekend anchor.
Okay.
Weekday reporter.
So you get done with University of Utah. Let's go back just a little bit then. And is your husband going to school too at this point in time or what's happening
no.
there?
My husband, my first husband, never went to school.
Okay.
He was a salesman. He did furniture sales and that type of thing. And that's what he did as a living.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
So you went from Salt Lake to Idaho.
Yes.
And was it, I mean, did you just like apply for a job at KIFI or what happened there?
Well, what happened is one of the anchors, her name was Susan Furness.
Mm-hmm. I remember her.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She went from Channel 8 down to KUTV.
Oh, okay.
And so we got to know each other down there. And she had stayed in touch with the people up there. Mm-hmm. And when the weekend anchor position came open, she said to them, you know, there's someone down here that I think, you know, you ought to look at.
Okay.
And then she told me this would be a really good position for you right out of school.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's on air, which a lot of people right out of school don't get those,
that
you know,
of,
on air positions,
sure.
especially not an anchor position.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I really appreciated her mentoring in that regard.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
that was my first job out of school.
So you moved up here?
Yes. All five kids.
All five kids. Were you still married at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So he followed you up as well then.
Mm-hmm.
And you ended up here in, well, were you living in Idaho Falls at that point
no,
in time?
No, I was actually living in Pocatello at that time because they had the anchors for the weekend. One anchor would live in Idaho Falls and the other would live in Pocatello.
Oh,
and that
I
way
see.
You could cover stories and then meet up at the station and then actually anchor from that point.
So. Oh, wow. So was Jay,
was
he like the program director at that point in time or was he still kind of low on
the... No, he was the main anchor at that point.
Okay.
And then Carol Honus was the five and six, I guess.
Okay, so that's when they had started their 5 o'clock
Yeah,
show.
They had five, six, and ten.
Like
were
late
the
80s,
three.
Early 90s or something, they started that, right? Yeah.
And then they had another gal named Susan Hoffman, who was anchoring. And then she left. She and her husband moved back east somewhere.
Oh, okay.
And so that main position came open, and that's when I stepped into that position for that.
Hmm.
And it wasn't very long because I realized really pretty quickly this isn't working with my family. And
for the nighttime deal.
And it just, it didn't feel right. I loved being a mom. I mean, I always have.
Sure.
And it's, you know, obviously it was my priority.
Mm-hmm.
I loved cooking dinner. I love cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I loved having the family around the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
That was always something that was very important to me. And I wasn't able to do really any of the things that I felt were really vital as a mom. And I mean, simple things like just reading to my kids before bed.
Right.
You know,
right.
talking to them, having that time, it was all taken away.
Yeah.
And so when the position came open at the hospital, it was not just that. I mean, the money was also so much better.
Sure.
And so it just seemed like at that time a good thing to do. I will tell you that about 3 months into it, I missed news so much.
Really?
I really did. I mean, it was a very difficult thing for me to leave. And so it was a great job. I worked with great people. I was still able to tell stories because part of my job as the director of PR was to tell the stories of what we were doing at the hospital, the people, and the different things that were going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still in that mode.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't as much as I wanted as far as that type of thing. So anyway.
So how long did you work at the hospital
it
then?
It was about 4 years.
Okay.
I mean, it was an...
And that was mid-90s then or somewhere around there?
Okay. It was. And then... I was very fortunate because somebody that I had worked with at Channel 8 who had left and then came back as the news director for Channel 6 had a position open, and I ended up taking that position. It was a day shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was still anchoring, still reporting, but it was a day shift position. And then she left, and I was actually put in as the news director down there.
Oh, wow.
And I don't think that I would have been able to transition that quickly into that type of a position had I not had my experience at the hospital.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Because I was put into a management position at the hospital. And so I was able to learn all these, you know, things that I had no clue about until I had gone into that position.
Oh.
And so, and I ended up getting my MBA.
Oh, okay.
So I had that as well in that time. And so going down and working as the news director and having to do all the hiring and training and payroll and budgets and all those things, I had no experience in that until I had worked for the hospital. So it worked out really well. It was just the stars aligned.
And so how long did you keep that position then at KPVI?
It was a long time. It was... Gosh, almost 15 years.
Was it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now you still work there, don't you?
I do. Okay. I do. I mean, it's hard to say work.
Okay.
Because what I do there is really just...
You tell stories.
I do. And it's really... I've got a dream job as far as that is. Because I do feature stories called Idaho Gems, which are about people, places, and things in Idaho. And so I travel around and talk to people about just really... cool and interesting things in our state. And there are so many interesting people and places. And I just returned from a trip. We were down in the Twin Falls area doing stories about the base jumpers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just so many interesting things going on in places. And so that's what I do.
Yeah, and that's like the only...
Very part-time. Very part-time.
Okay. But you like it that way.
Oh, I love it that way.
And so, well, first of all, I'd say, isn't the Prime Bridge like the only place in the country that is you can jump off at base jump like that?
Without a permit.
Without a permit, right.
It is.
And
it
we unfortunately do lose people every now and then jumping off of that bridge.
You know, it's actually one of the safest places to base jump.
Uh-huh.
And mainly because there's just so much space.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who are injured and killed in base jumping. It's because the wind hits their parachute a certain way and they slam into a building.
Oh, wow.
That's there.
Right.
You know? And
right.
So they jump off buildings and hit other buildings.
Mm.
And with the way the bridge is, it's just this expanse. And so they have a lot of room for error, I guess. It's still,
I'm not sure I would do it. Did you do it while you were down there?
Heavens.
No, okay.
No. For me, even to go up onto the bridge where I could hardly even get up.
Down.
It was so horrifying for me. And I had nightmares the night afterward because it was just seeing them do that. It is.
They're crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in a good way, but they're crazy. It's
they
just,
were super
I
fun to be around. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, they love life.
Yes.
I mean,
but,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Huh. Well, I mean, I've seen one or two of them. Unfortunately, I don't have a good signal on my TV around here. I have just antenna. But I do thoroughly enjoy the stories that you do that. I love storytelling. That's, I guess, why I do this podcast, because I think it's the best way to, I guess, make the world a little smaller. Does that make any sense?
It does. It makes a ton of sense. Yeah. And that's everywhere I go. I meet people and there's just... so many different connections that you find. I absolutely love it. And I've been up to Wallace, Idaho. Had never been there before.
Really?
And it's kind of forced me to go to places and do things that I would have never done and meet people I would have never met. And that's what I love about news was exactly that. I mean, the just variety of different people that I was able to meet and get to know is just wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great. Mm-hmm. So, but you talked about the fact that you're maybe, I guess you could say, your first love is writing.
Yes.
And you had this novel. Now, first of all, I'm curious to know, did you ever let anybody know that you wrote that novel?
Funny, because my husband now, my first husband was killed in a car crash.
Okay.
And so I... you know, was a widow with five kids for a while. Yeah, it was not fun. Yeah. I mean, it was a really difficult thing. And you know, to kind of go through that tragedy in our family in a fishbowl was really a tough thing as well.
Sure.
But this community and the, you know, people that I've met, I mean, it's the reason I'm still here. Mm-hmm. They were so supportive and kind to us and helped us through it. And then I met Dave in 2002. And he actually had seen me shopping in Fred Meyer the night before.
Oh, okay.
Was too shy to come up and say anything to me. And so he ended up emailing me at the station, and at first I brushed him off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for quite a while.
Who's this creep emailing me?
Exactly, I did. And he was persistent, and when I found out that he, too, was from San Diego originally.
Oh, okay.
And that he was a veterinarian, being this incredible animal lover that I am, I thought, well, he can't be all bad.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we ended up dating and we got married in 2004. And he is a ravenous reader.
Is he?
Oh, he loves to read. And so, but it took me an entire year of being married to him before I got up the nerve to let him read my book. I know, isn't that crazy?
Yes.
It is.
But I understand. I do understand.
It took a long time. I was just so nervous about it because it's such a personal thing. I mean, when you write news, it's facts and, you know, you've got to get your information, all that. It's creative, yes, but it's a different type.
Sure.
With, you know, novel writing and with, you know, fiction, it is so personal. Mm-hmm. And so it was just really intimidating and scary, but I did let him read it. And he told me he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, he's married to me. And so, of course, he's going to say that. But it still was enough that I got the nerve up to send it out to publishers. And I sent it out. And about a year into that, I had so many rejection letters, I could have wallpapered my house.
Really?
You know, it was just super deflating and discouraging. But I think because of everything that I had been through in life leading up to that point, I thought, you know, I'm not going to give up. I want this really bad.
Yeah.
And now. And so what I ended up doing is I ended up finding an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And that made all the difference.
How hard was it to find an agent?
It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
You know, because
They're almost as picky sometimes as the publishers, aren't they?
Because they don't make a cent unless you make money.
Sure.
And they're completely off commission. And so, but that's why they work for you, because a publisher has so many people sending them things over and over and over. An agent they know has already vetted this. They already have confidence. They already love it. Otherwise, they wouldn't waste their time with
it. Right, right.
And so they're able to get your book into the people that actually acquire these books and buy them. And so once Donna decided to represent me and loved my novel, you know, what I tell people is, you know, I finally got published. It wasn't my novel. It was my cookbook. I wrote the Zucchini Houdini cookbook.
Okay.
And that was my first book
that was
published.
Okay.
Yes. But I don't know if it was the mojo from the cookbook being published or what it was, but 2 months later, my novel was published by West Side Books out of New York City.
Wow.
And so,
that was the one you wrote when you were 17.
It is.
Wow.
It is. And so
has it been successful?
It has. Wow. I've been very pleased. And it was...
And what was the name of that book?
I Am Nuchu. And it was all of my books are kind of these murder mystery, dark family secrets with lots of suspense and twists and turns and all that. And it definitely was. It was about a young man who goes back to the Fort Duchesne Indian Reservation after his parents divorce, and his mother's Native American. So she moves the family or her kids back to this. Mm-hmm. And then he discovers that an aunt was murdered early, and he figures out the whole. And it just has a lot of it's a young adult. It's considered young adult.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely not for young.
Young.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I would say, 14 and older is a good age for that. So anyway.
So you've got your book published. Mm-hmm. How many books do you have published now?
Well, right after that one, about a year later, my second novel, which was The Color of Snow, was published. Mm-hmm. And that one I wrote after, I'd covered the Stephanie Crane missing person case mm-hmm. in Chalice.
Yeah.
And I've always been just intrigued with the fact that nothing's ever been, solved with that.
Yeah.
I mean, she just vanished.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking about, what if all of a sudden she came back and said, this is what happened to me, this whatever. And so I started thinking about that, and that's what the storyline kind of is with mm-hmm. Color of Snow. It's loosely based on mm-hmm. those types of things. It did really well. Yeah, it sold well, and I've had really good reviews off of that. And then The Treasure Cedar Creek came out it's been over a year now. And it was actually an Amazon bestseller for 3 weeks.
Oh, nice.
Which was super, just really was a wonderful thing. And then my last book just came out in May, and it's called Like Ravens in Winter.
And how's that doing?
It's doing well.
And what's that book about?
That one I wrote when I was working for ABC News.
Oh, okay.
Out at the Gulf War, and it's about a producer who, while she's working, ends up going back to her childhood home in Pennsylvania because of some things going on with the family, and discover some mm-hmm. really interesting things about her past.
So is that dark family secret type of thing?
It all has that, yeah. My mother's always saying, why do you write that stuff? People are going to think we're crazy.
What kind of dark secrets are in your past, Brenda?
And that's the thing, is it not many.
So are they all published by the same publisher then?
No. Taylor and Seal is my main publisher, but because their genres are a little more limited.
Mm-hmm.
The last book, Black Opal Books, mm-hmm. published Like Ravens in Winter. So,
okay. I told Phil Moon mm-hmm. that you were going to be on, and he said, you need to ask her about something. And I can't remember what it was,
oh
but
God.
It was some sort of investigative thing that
oh,
you were
dear.
Doing.
Okay.
So let me see if I can find it really quick.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, where was it? All right, Phil, where'd you go?
Oh, I know what he's talking about.
It said, he said it's really a fascinating thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I can't remember.
It's a story I covered years ago,
okay.
and it was the Rolly Grube case, where he was convicted of murdering a young woman up in Ashton.
Okay.
Amy Hausner. And, it just was one of those where the evidence was so not there, and even though he somewhat confessed to this, it was one of those where you just kind of got the impression that it wasn't real.
Mm.
And after I started really investigating and looking into it, and then Judge Greg Mueller, mm-hmm. who was mm-hmm. at the time the defense attorney for Rolly Grube.
Yeah, that would be the one that Phil was talking about.
He was very, very, sure that this young man did not do this.
Mm.
And so even after he had been convicted, Judge Mueller stuck with him and kept trying pro bono, did it without any money.
Really?
Yeah. And eventually he got him out. And and to the point where he wasn't just he was let out, and he had to take a type of a plea in which he admitted guilt to something, but it was like he didn't really admit to it.
Yeah.
But eventually, Judge Mueller was able to get it completely wiped.
Just totally exonerated.
The tragic thing about this whole case was that he died soon after he was released.
Oh, he did.
Just from like a, I don't know if it was an aneurysm or what but he ended up having a stroke. That's what it was,
sure.
And ended up dying.
Wow.
So he wasn't out very long. There are people that still absolutely believe that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many other things that mm-hmm. point to different. It's a fascinating case, and
we seem to have a few of those kind of stories mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. here that we've had.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's interesting that you know, of course, the Dodge case here in Idaho Falls has been pretty
crazy.
Which is
a case I covered. You know? Oh yeah, my beat was Crime and Court.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I loved. And, you know, people were always surprised because here I am, you know, I came up from Utah and I've got five kids, and they always thought, oh, she's going to cover education or animal stories or these, you know, fluffy feature stories. And really, though, my love was the real investigative mm-hmm. Crime and Court. And I always did those stories. And so, you know, the major murder cases that we've had in this area, the major just any court case, those are the ones that I enjoyed and I covered.
Hmm. So, I was going to go somewhere and now my brain just totally went off in left field. Yeah. So, do you do any more crime investigation mm-hmm. reporting or anything like that?
You know,
or you just mostly do those Idaho Gems?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
As far as for the TV and stuff, I mean, as far as my writing and that, you know, there's a lot of things. I'm always writing. I'm mm-hmm. always looking, you know, for new stories and ideas and that. And, you know, the research end of writing is what I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And my books have a lot of research mm-hmm. that go into them.
Sure.
The Treasure of Cedar Creek, which was my third novel, is a historical thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot of, like 2 years of research to put that together. So what I loved about the investigative reporting is what I love about writing the types of novels mm-hmm. that I write. And that's why they do kind of have those, you know, the murder mystery type themes to them, is because that's what I enjoy.
Yeah, that's what you're interested in. Sure.
It is. Mm. And so that's what I still do.
Are you writing another book right now?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Always writing.
Always got something going. And often I'll have more than one.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I recall you telling me that you had a YouTube channel or something that you were trying to do? Cooking?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
I've got a YouTube channel because I write a column for the Idaho State Journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a recipe column.
Mm-hmm.
And I do some video tutorials with those recipes on the YouTube channel. It's Tales of the Dinner Bell is what the my blog is called.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got like 400 recipes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I do a lot of cooking. I absolutely love to cook.
Any kind of food, just whatever? Or
you
is
know,
it,
it's funny because most of the stuff that I cook is stuff that, you know, having to raise all these mm-hmm, kids mm-hmm. and do it on a budget.
Yeah.
I became very good at putting stuff together that was, you know, inexpensive, easy,
sure.
quick,
yeah.
and yet still really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my forte, and that's still what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And every night, I still, now that it's just me and my husband, I still cook every night.
Yeah, yeah.
I rarely go out, and I love having people over. It's just fun.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So how's your YouTube channel been? Does it get a lot of views, or how does that
you
work?
You know, I probably need to do more with it
uh-huh.
than I do.
Okay.
But no, I enjoy it. I mean, I get really nice comments from people, and it's just fun. I mean,
yeah, it's something you just do for fun.
I just do it for fun.
Maybe kind of a mm-hmm. just a relaxing type of thing.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great. So you pretty much, I mean, your biggest focus, though, is writing.
It is.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I use the word retire, which is kind of funny, because really you're busier often when you retire than when you're actually working, which is the case.
Uh-huh.
But I retired in June of 2015. And a lot of that was because in 2011, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
And that really, for both me and my husband, it was one of those where we were like, you know, man, it just makes you realize you want to do what you want to do.
Right.
And so I, you know, I've got grandkids. I wanted to spend time with them and my parents and just, you know, do things that were really important in my priorities. And writing, obviously, was
right
one of
there.
Those. I wanted to be able to do more of that. And so that's what I did. I quit my job And I actually quit a lot of my boards and other things that I was involved with. You know, it was a good thing. I have actually gone back. I am on a board for the child abuse prevention and some of those things, because you don't want to give up everything.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to have those things that mean something to you and that push you. But being able to write more has been a joy. It really is just so much fun for me.
Hmm. So that would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
One of these days, I mean, you know, we're in the midst of working and trying to get our kids raised, but my wife has her own little writing room that she does. She's more of the writer than I am. I like to write, but she's the one that, I mean, that's her obsession. And so she does quite a bit, but she has to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do it, to find that sweet spot of being able to concentrate on her writing and get it out. But it's fun. I'm glad to be able to support her. And we went down to that that LTUE thing down in Provo, and that's a great time. That's first time I'd ever been to anything like that, and it was fun.
It's inspiring. Yeah. I do those things. I used to be very. I do my writing in solitude. You know, I didn't really talk about what I was writing. Mm-hmm. I would just kind of get in my little office and block out the world. And when I went to my first conference, I went because I was invited to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I ended up going. And then when I wasn't speaking, I ended up going to some of the little workshops.
Sure.
And I just absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
It just inspired me. It gave me some ideas. I started meeting people mm-hmm. that had, you know, like ideas and all that. And so now I go, not often, I wouldn't say, but I like to go mm-hmm. when I need that inspiration to kind of, you have that with being a writer.
Yeah.
You often get in these ruts and I can't get this out. And when you go to something like that, it's amazing how you come back and then you're able to really do what you want.
Well, and I even enjoyed it because I think what I liked about the LTUE is that it wasn't like just like so focused on writing, mm-hmm. but there was like other things too. Like they had people talking about movies and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where my background is. I like maybe the movie aspect or the entertainment aspect, kind of like this. And so it was fun to be able to be a part of those. And I actually ended up getting in touch with one of the people down there, and sounds like I'm going to be editing their podcast that they're doing at some point. So we'll see when that works, but that should be fun. So we'll wrap things up.
Okay.
What I've started to do recently on my interviews is I like to ask just really cheesy, trivial questions to end things out. So don't think too hard about these. They're not hard-hitting journalism like you're used to here. They're very mild questions. Okay, first one.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite superhero?
Ooh, my favorite superhero. That's so hard. I don't know. That is so hard. I would, you know, honestly, probably Superman, just because I loved that movie with Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorites, and it had so much humor in it, but it was just, I absolutely loved it, and I watched it, you know, as a child,
mm-hmm.
You know, way back, mm-hmm. and so,
yearly. It was on TV every year, at least once a year, and I missed that.
No, I just absolutely loved that. Went to it in the theater.
Did you?
Yeah, because, you know, I was in 7th, 8th grade when that came out, and it was just so cool.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best. Christopher Reeve is always going to be Superman for those of us of a certain generation. I mean, it doesn't matter what other Superman movies come out, that's for sure. Well, that's a good answer. Second
one. He was a reporter, you know, his day job.
There you go. So. Clark Kent.
That's right.
Yeah. You didn't ever have a boss like he did, though, did you?
No.
Okay, good.
No, thank goodness.
All right. What about, who was it? Peter Parker in Spider-Man. How about his boss in those movies? Did you ever have... You remember those?
Yeah, kind of.
He was kind of mean.
Yeah.
He was like,
The boss is always mean, right? In those types of things.
Maybe in real life sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Anyways, number two, favorite band, current band.
Aerosmith is my
all-time
favorite. In fact, I'm going to see them.
Are they actually touring?
They are. They're down in Vegas.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm going to see them on July 9th.
Oh.
And I am so excited. Yeah. They've always been my favorite, so...
Aerosmith.
Yes. Love them.
All righty.
Surprising, huh?
Well, it kind of is. Yes. I mean, I would like to see. Yeah. I would like to see you rocking out at Aerosmith.
I can't wait.
Is Steven Tyler healthy enough to actually be?
He is. He's like 70 years old, but he is still just going strong. I mean, look at Mick Jagger.
Well, yes,
you
this
know?
Is true.
He's 76, and they're still touring. Yeah. And he is just, I mean, going strong.
So. Yeah, that's pretty. Well, yep. All righty then.
Inspirational.
Well, you have to let me know how that concert goes.
Is it
at one of the casinos down there?
Or
is it
at the park, which is this big
gotcha.
Pavilion type thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, number three then, mm-hmm. your favorite quote.
My favorite quote. Well, the one I really like is a woman is like a tea bag. You don't know how strong she is until you get her in hot water. Mm. And that Eleanor Roosevelt mm-hmm. said that. And I feel like that is very fitting, you know, it's just
for you. Or?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's one of those where I really believe that we're more productive and happier if we're challenged and not necessarily bad challenges, mm-hmm. you know, but just I think that when you have, you know, obstacles to overcome and challenges that you either look for or just mm-hmm. happen. You just are more productive and eventually it teaches you resilience and it's a good thing.
Right. Well, I mean, some of the best things come from pressure, right?
Sure,
I mean, diamonds or whatever,
exactly.
It's all created by mm-hmm. pressure. So that's a good one. So that was Eleanor Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. You said mm-hmm. Okay, great. Number four, then, your best piece of advice.
My best piece of advice. Don't take yourself too seriously. I just think too often we're so worried about what people think. You know, we spend our time trying to be thinner and try to be richer and try to, you know, make ourselves look like we're just having such a great time on Facebook or everything else. You know, we worry too much about what other people think. And, you know, I everybody has their challenges in life. And I just think, you know, take your...
Yeah.
Give yourself a break.
It's not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I know that there's been so many studies that have been done recently about the curse of social media and mm-hmm. Facebook and how we just, you know, we think, oh, my life isn't like them.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember being in high school, but that was back in the 80s and 90s and mm-hmm. how it was hard then.
Yes.
I mean, it's got to be just 10 times harder for kids these days to try to measure up to what they think is real life when they see it on Facebook. And I've been, a church youth group leader for a while. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things I've just like, Facebook is terrible. Stay off of it. You know, if you can't. And of course that's me. I'm on it all the time saying stupid comments and reading the comments on things that I should not be reading the comments on, but I should take my own advice. So, well, Brenda, I appreciate you coming by and talking with me this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. This was really fun.
Brenda Baumgartner-Stanley on Everyone Has a Story. Thank you, Brenda, for stopping by the dungeon and sharing your story with me. I truly appreciate it. As you guys could probably tell, Brenda is a local celebrity here in the area. Since she's been on TV, everybody knows your local news anchors, right? If you are interested in finding a little bit more about her books, you can check out her books on Amazon.com or anywhere that books are sold, for that matter. I'll leave a link in the show notes just so you can get a hold of her a lot easier than having to type in Amazon.com in your web browser, okay? If you want to share your story with me here at Everyone Has a Story, I want to hear it. This show does not exist unless we have people like you that are willing to share your story. So please reach out to me. You can find me at K8 Radio on Twitter. You can also find me on Everyone Has a Story on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm everywhere. So just check me out. Get a hold of me. Gmail account, KNATRADIO, K8Radio@gmail.com. Please let me know, hey, I want to share my story. What do I do? Don't worry. It's not scary whatsoever. You could talk to Brenda. You could talk to any of my past guests, and they'll tell you that I'm a nice guy, or at least I portray myself as such when they're here in the studio. Talk to my family. They might tell you a different story. No, hopefully most people think I'm an okay guy. All right. But again, we need stories. I love stories. I love your story. You have a story. You're unique and you have a story and you should share it with the world. All right. Again, this is Nate Wade. I'm hoping you had a great Labor Day weekend and a great week ahead. Here's talking to you next week. Again, Nate Wade signing off. Remember, everyone is unique. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Have a great day, everyone.